The title of this Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment is Mind. Awakening is subtraction, not addition. What are we doing when we are awakening? Aren't we seeking the truth? And as we get a little bit more than what we had the moment before, we are in the process of awakening. If you study the proper way to read a book, it emphasizes the procedure to include looking at any summaries that are available. And of course, this depends on how well the book is organized. The textbook of Christian Science, which is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is structured from beginning to end, top to bottom. Mary Baker Eddy is credited as the author, although she says that she was a scribe under orders of God. She gave us three introductory quotes, which are printed in the textbook immediately following the title pages. And those three quotes are, number one, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." That's words of Jesus. Number two, "Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Shakespeare. And number three, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." So she tells us to start looking for the truth as the first and most important motive in reading anything in the textbook. And she's telling us that our thinking, by quoting Shakespeare, is extremely important in understanding the truth. Because if we're thinking along lines of evil, we won't be able to even recognize a morsel of truth. So we have to take the steps to realize that whatever progress or regression that we've had based on the life we've been leading, we want something better. So we know we're going to have to be giving up something that we have in terms of understanding or perception so that we can get a better perception to be able to separate truth from error, good from evil, right from wrong, life from death, real thinking from false concepts, and so forth. And if we start implanting into our consciousness, or rather the opposite, as the title implies, to examine our consciousness, to clean it out and cleanse it of things that are not correct, then we will be able to start awakening. Because we don't need to add anything to our consciousness. What we really need to do is to examine it and get rid of, subtract therefrom, anything that is not as pure as we should be considering as a motive and as a way of life that is going to be better than what we've been experiencing. So it's always subtracting out the evil to let the light shine. It's already there, but we don't recognize it. We can't see it because we're in the dark. Our prayer should be living the life that we want to be living to give us a better sense of well-being. That is really true prayer. And as we search for the truth, we will be able to do that. If we need confidence, try studying the 101 pages, the last ones in the book, from page 600 to 700. And therein lies the testimonies of 85 people, all of which have been verified, reporting on 486 healings. So, just under 6 healings per testifier. Now, some of them were healed of the same thing. But we're still talking about hundreds of healings that are unique. In other words, different topics of healing. And if after reading some 400 testimonies, you are not enlightened, then read them again. Our website includes the healings of Jesus and his parables, which have tremendous lessons in it. In each case, the personality had to be removed from the individual that was working on the healing. And that they found that the less they thought about the problem, the easier it was to think about truth, to think about God, to think about perfect man. Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26, tells us to let us make man in our image and likeness. That word let is telling us we have to permit a change of consciousness to be taking place. And then after that, it repeats the sentence without the word let in it. So first, the revelation in Genesis is that we have to open consciousness so that we can recognize greater things than what we are presently aware of. And if we do that, then God is going to awaken us further to tell us it's already done. Because the last part, if you go to the end of chapter 1, including the first 3 verses of chapter 2 of Genesis, it tells us that everything that God made was good, and it was already complete. And so he rested. And this was long before, supposedly, the history of your and mine and everyone else's human experience began. So everything was perfect before we ever started our appearance on planet Earth, or whatever other planet we supposedly came from. So the first step is we have to realize that we want something better. And if we want any kind of clue that that is possible, then we read healings that are in the back of the textbook, or healings of Jesus, or healings of expert practitioners. Everything has to be verified because we're looking for truth. We're not looking for someone just making a statement. And once we do those 2 steps, then we've got to earnestly study. And Mary Baker Eddy begins with the definition of God. Chapter 14 is entitled Recapitulation, and that is therefore a summary of everything that precedes it, which are the first 13 chapters. And it's in the form of question and answers. And the very first question is, what is God? So she's telling us that that is the most important thing out of the whole 13 previous chapters to be focusing on. That is the topic where our focus must be. She gives us the definition of God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And on page 587, which is in the Key to the Scriptures portion of the textbook, she gives us another definition of God, which is a focus on a few different words, and that is, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. And then she gives us the same seven primary terms for God in a little different order. And here she says, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. And then a focus on the last two words she wants us to remember, all substance, intelligence. John asked Jesus, is there a material body? And then he asked Jesus, is there a material universe? In other words, he's saying, is the substance that we appear to see with our eyes real substance? And so Mary Baker Eddy is giving us the high sign, the big clue that says everything she said previous is substance. In other words, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. And God being the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. And in the previous one, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. All of that is real substance. But more focused than that, she dedicates the second term in the first group of the order, called the Days of Creation order of the seven terms, which is spirit, and she defines that as being our only substance. So we know how Jesus must have answered John when he said, is there a material body or a material universe? Because she tells us in the very definitions of God that the only substance is the opposite of matter. The opposite of matter. So there could not possibly be a universe or a body or anything else that is real made up of matter. What is substance? Substance is flawless. Flawless. Symbols are visible, but the real substance is invisible. The laws of the universe, which are what these definitions are all about, are invisible. There may be a symbol. It's not any different than a traffic sign or a speed limit traffic sign that gives a number on it. There may or may not be a policeman or a highway patrol or a sheriff or anyone else that is going to enforce it that is visible. They may be busy somewhere else, but that doesn't mean the law is not there. And if we're going to be a law-abiding citizen, as long as it's not a corrupt law, And Mary Baker Eddy says if there's a corrupt law, then work to get it changed. She never says to violate the law, because on a citizen level, we need to be obeying the laws. And if they're rotten laws, then we should go to work to help getting them changed or canceled altogether. So if we are living the laws of the universe, then we understand better what Mary Baker Eddy says in the third quote, where she says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed." In other words, she is aligning her thought, speech, and actions with the laws of the universe. And when we do that, we are blessed. Are we looking for a law that supports condemning someone? What do you think forgiveness is? Forgiveness means we've made a bad mistake. We have condemned. How can we forgive someone if we haven't condemned them? And how can we condemn them if we're supposed to be the image and likeness of God? The definition of God is good. Perfect, as a matter of fact. Incorporeal, divine, supreme, and perfect. All-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving. Does someone that is loving condemn someone? Dr. Fluno was one of Mary Baker Eddy's first lecturers. So we're talking back in the 1870s and 80s. One of his top topics, primary topics that he focused on, was criticism. Not only does he say it's the wrong thing to do, he says it leads to all evil. Can you imagine that? All evil. Well, what are we criticizing? We're criticizing God. We're criticizing the laws of the universe. We're criticizing what real substance is. We're criticizing the first chapter of Genesis. We're criticizing all the commandments. We're criticizing the golden rule. Jesus, when asked a question, was addressed by the Pharisee that said, "Good master," and then he asked the question, and Jesus says, "Why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God." How about that? We've got to be careful if we think we've done something good. We may have reflected the goodness of God, but any power to do anything is from omnipotence. The definition of good is God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. So all power is in God. All action is in God. How can we do anything? We can't do a single thing, because all action is God. The only thing we can do is reflect the action of God. God does not give up possession of his qualities. He makes them available to everyone. We can't steal a 7 from the 10 digits, 0 through 9. We can't even steal a 0. We can use it. We can reflect what it will do in some mathematical equation. When we add, subtract, multiply, or divide, we can utilize it, but we can't take it because it's an idea. It's an idea that's embedded within what has been proven to be the rules of mathematics. What do you think the most important rule is with God? The most important law of God. Jesus was asked, what is the most important commandment of all? And you know, he studied the Old Testament because he quoted it right after he came out of the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. He quoted from that to the devil, the supposed person that was labeled the devil. There is no real devil, but it certainly is a suggestion that seems to hang around. It's like a painting on a wall, and we're staring at that wall, and sure enough, there's something that says, I am the devil. But it's only paint. It may be able to be washed off with water or some kind of a solvent, but it's not real because it can be eradicated. The only thing that cannot be eradicated is what is invisible, which is really the idea behind every spiritual symbol. If we look at a wonderful tree, that's a symbol of all the qualities that is represented in that tree. It could be providing shade. It could be representing what the last thing that is stated in the first chapter of Genesis, going through verse 3 of the next chapter, where God did all of his work and then rested. Well, we could go and rest underneath a big, beautiful shade tree, and that'll give us a better feeling than if we're in the hot sun. A beautiful rose is giving us a symbol of the beauty and the wonderful aroma. If we're lying in bed and have soft sheets or a soft towel when we dry off after a shower or taking a swim in the pool, that's a good feel. We may taste something that tastes good. The spiritual quality is that it's a good taste. But the taste itself is invisible. It's only symbolized by whatever it is that is conveying that to us. If we have a good feeling about a relationship, perhaps it's very harmonious, that would give us a good feeling about that relationship. But the real truth is that the harmony in that relationship is a reflection of divine principle. Because divine principle is harmonious and it's balanced. So what do we think could be the most important law and commandment? Well, Jesus' reply to that question, what is the most important commandment? He said, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. They asked for one commandment. He's giving them one commandment because this is unified. Love your neighbor as yourself. The golden rule. The golden rule is part of and cannot be divorced from the greatest commandment of all. And the greatest commandment of all cannot be divorced from the golden rule. The Bible clearly states that we cannot love God unless we love our neighbor. It says we cannot love what is invisible unless we love what is visible. And if we read and understand the first chapter of Genesis through the third verse of the second, then we know that God made man in his image and likeness. So if we're not loving the symbol of God, we can't love God. I've heard people say, I love God, but boy, I don't like that guy. I heard a woman say one time, I have forgiven my daughter, but I never forget what she did. Well, somebody had to do some condemning before they could even think about forgiving. Remember, the first commandment is, love the Lord thy God. Love. The seven synonymous terms for God are in the order of the days of creation, which is what Genesis 1 is all about. And really, it's not even creation. Mary Baker Eddy explains that there was no creation, but it's a revelation. Because truth always is. It's not new. There is not, the Bible says there is nothing new under the sun. Everything that is true always has been true. Always. No beginning, no end. It's like a circle. And forget about how physicists tell you that a circle was produced by, you know, many parts that are straight lines. The symbol of a circle is there is no beginning and no end. And you know the strongest structure in a building is one in which the roof is a curve. Think about that. It's the concept of no beginning and no end which gives the strength. It is unity par excellence. That's what we need to be. As a matter of fact, a lot of times people, when they are in a room together and they're eating a meal, maybe a beautiful brunch or dinner, whatever, midnight snack, and they're inclined to have a prayer, everyone is encouraged to hold hands. That's unity. Unity. One of the most effective suggestions of the opposite of good suggests to break everything up into parts in order to be able to destroy it. That's what this fake pandemic was all about. That's what World War II was all about. World War II was to get the women busy working. Get them out of the home. That was one of the primary motives of World War II. Get them used to not having a family. Getting used to becoming independent of unity. Separation. This whole idea of this fake pandemic was distancing yourself from everyone else. They tried to prevent any groups. That's the reason they tried everything possible to close all the churches. They didn't want any unity because they couldn't break up America and, of course, other countries, but America was the symbol that they were really going after because America was founded on totally different principles than every other country. But that's the whole idea of war. Not only is it genocide, but it's to keep the family broken up. All of these things that have been mentioned are pointing to the importance of not depending upon what is visible, but looking beneath the surface to what is really responsible for the visible symbols to be in existence. And if it is something that is not good, such as the visible symbol of death, then one should be encouraged to realize that that is what they have to deny as being real, and they have to go beneath the surface and say, well, what does God say about man? God doesn't say that man is subject to death. You have to be born in order to die. And the truth of reality, as the Bible says, there is nothing new under the sun, which means there is no such thing as a material birth. It is a false concept of revelation. Take a look at Genesis chapter 2, beginning with verse 4. The first thing that happens is that there went up a mist, M-I-S-T. Think of a fog. I've been in a fog that was so thick, if you held your hand in front of your face, you couldn't see your hand. You obviously don't want to be driving. That is exactly what happens when we try to understand our heritage. We're looking through a mist. We're trying to see through a fog. Should we can depend on what we understand when we can't see clearly? It's enough of a challenge to understand when we can see clearly. Because we have all of these reminders of suggestions that are trying to tell us that good is bad and bad is good. Evil does everything possible to mock truth. Now, in reality, evil can't do anything by itself. It is only a suggestion. And we have to give it a home before it has any sense of reality. Wentworth Winslow said, think of yourself as being in a room and there's a radio in there that is tuned into station KOG, Kingdom of God, that is only announcing the facts about God and man and the relationship between God and man, which of course is source and reflection. And also in that same room is a telephone, ringing its head off. What does that mean? It's trying to get our attention to pick it up and listen. It's trying to get into our thought falsities about something that is not true. He says, don't pick up the phone. Listen to the radio. Don't pick up the phone. Of course, today it'd probably be something besides a radio. But whatever, whether it's audio on the internet or any number kinds of media, but we don't want to listen to anything that is not spirit, anything that is not spiritual, anything that is not good. Because God is defined as being good. Even Jesus could not claim to be using that word as a quality of himself, because he knew that the real definition of good was perfection. Jesus was the most perfect man that walked on the globe, according to Mary Baker Eddy herself. But did Jesus make any mistakes? How many came to his crucifixion? He taught 50,000 people probably in two sessions alone. In one it was 4,000, and in another it was 5,000, and they didn't count women and children. Jesus thought children were one of the greatest things possible, because they were innocent and they would listen to him and learn from him. And each family, I would guess, probably had 3 or 4 children and a woman for the wife. So you're probably looking at 4 or maybe 5 times the 9,000 people. It's easy to see that there could be 40 or 50,000 people. And how many came to his crucifixion? To tell Jesus that they loved him, or anything that was good. The Bible says there were about 6 people there. 1 out of 12 disciples. So we know he made 11 mistakes in choosing his disciples. And even John was not perfect, because John went to sleep when he went up on the mountain with Jesus, but he came out of it. And there's no record of him ever passing on, his material so-called body ever dying. So he likely ascended. There's no evidence to the contrary. They couldn't find a body. And Jesus came back after he ascended to meet with John to dictate the book of Revelation. That's all explained by one of the finest Bible scholars next to Mary Baker Eddy. His name is Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He's on our website, a very serious Christian Science student. Well, he's not in visible form anymore, but he gave us some very valuable insights into the Bible. 10 Bible lessons. Bliss Knapp was his teacher, and Bliss Knapp was under the tutelage of Mary Baker Eddy from the time he was about 7 or 8 years old. Very interesting how a so-called fake of the real mind operates. The real mind is immortal and divine. The fake is so-called mortal, and obviously far from divine. Divine means perfect. Mary Baker Eddy calls mortal mind an oxymoron, because she says mind is immortal, so immortal means that's the opposite of mind. So it's not even a proper term to use the two words together. It's like black, white, green, blue, yellow, green, whatever. They are different, unique colors. You can blend them together, all of those ones mentioned, but that is a different name. It's a different name, which is unique. So some things you just cannot combine. It's like gold. They keep applying heat to it until they get the impurities out of it. The whole idea of awakening is to keep digging until we find as pure of concept that we're ready to accept. Don't think we have to go somewhere and find something that's not already within, because we're a reflection of God. If it's not in and a part of God, We're never going to find it. We're the reflection of God. Are we going to find something better than our source? And is our source going to have a manifestation that is less than itself? The only thing that is less from a reflection is the quantity. Because God is a summation of all the reflections. We're only one. So all the reflections together is exactly why we need to treat everyone as our brethren, because we all have the same Father, Mother, God. And if we're going to hate our brethren, we're in big trouble. We can't go anywhere. Mary Baker Eddy also had a very difficult time, just like Jesus did. He chose what he thought would be good people. He gave them his all to teach them right from wrong. But they weren't ready. In fact, Jesus said, "There is more that I could say, but there's no audience." That's what Mary Baker Eddy found. No one supported Mary Baker Eddy after she left invisible form. No one. And she had a whole crew of people living in her home with her. Everything was first class. She taught them day in and day out so that they would be qualified to have the CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. She gave them everything. And they did not even stand up for her to support her when she was mentally murdered. Not a single one. They were threatened by the board of directors, who told them that they would be excommunicated if they even mentioned her name. And of course, the day she passed on, the board of directors took her picture out of the textbook and republished it immediately. I mean, they had a publishing organization that could put things out fast. Of course, only taking one page and modifying it is not a big deal. So they were all fearful for their life, the same as Jesus. The mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, we know what that story was all about. Forgiveness, love, John, the only disciple, Martha, which was Mary Magdalene's sister, and the sister of Lazarus, who he raised from the dead. Lazarus and the sister Martha didn't show up. Tabitha or Tabitha's parents didn't show up. She was raised from the dead. The man that was cured of blindness, the leper, the one out of the 10 lepers that gave thanks, didn't show up. I mean, give me a break. Everybody was a coward. Nobody had any intestinal fortitude. No courage, no strength, nothing. They were a bunch of wimps. A bunch of wimps. Like a cat. They were scaredy cats. A little bit of a sound that was strange to them, and they're off. Fast as lightning. So what do you think we need to do to be reflecting God to get started? That's what awakening is. It's starting. The one quality that I'm trying to point out is the most important that you have to start with. And it has to be impersonal. Mary Baker Eddy says she makes strong demands on love. And I don't mean like we had in the Boy Scouts. every week at the weekly meeting of the Boy Scouts, we were asked what good deed we did during the previous week, or good deeds. And one fella said he helped Mrs. whatever her name was across the street. So everybody assumed that there was traffic and she was maybe frail and didn't walk that well. But then the second one said the same thing. The same person. And the third one the same. And about that time the scoutmaster said, "What's going on here? All three of you helped the same individual across the street?" It was a small town, so everyone knew the names. He said, "Explain that to me." And they told him that she didn't want to go. That's not the strong love that Mary Baker Eddy is talking about. Force someone to accept your love. But a child, you're going to hold the hand to protect the child, because the child hasn't learned about traffic and about cars are bigger than they are, or a train walk across a railroad track, not when a train is coming. If you stumble and fall, that might be the last time you see anything. Making a strong demand on love, it seems that that would be that it needs to be impersonal, it needs to be spiritual, and there can't even be an inclination that it could be misunderstood. You don't want to do anything that may be conceived of being evil. If we want to really start to improve our life, we have to realize that the very first story that is related in the book on Christian Science Practice, or the chapter 12, is the story of Mary Magdalene, where she went in to where Jesus was having a meal with the host, Simon, and she came prepared to care for him, wash his feet, put ointment on it, dry it with the hairs of her head. The custom was for the host to be washing the feet of the guests. They didn't have asphalt roads out there. Outside was dirt, a lot of dust. By the end of the day, I would imagine that, you know, from your knees on down, needed to be cleaned quite well. And Simon had not done that for Jesus. She was prepared and did it. And she had realized before she even entered the house that her life, well, when she went out to gather the things that she was bringing with her, she had already been healed, because she had already been awakened, and she realized that her life had been futile and she was in the wrong profession, a woman of ill repute. She wasn't any worse than the men that were patronizing her, but men were never condemned for being evil in that way, but the women were. So she had already transformed, and the symbol of her victory over evil was symbolized by what she did to who was the best man on earth. She showed her love without limitation in an impersonal way, just like Jesus when he washed his disciples' feet. He wanted to show that he was really their servant. Another proof that Mary Baker Eddy knows that love is number one on the list is one of her other large books entitled Miscellaneous Writings, several hundred pages. And the second article in that book is on love. The title is Love Your Enemies. And she explains in that article who are our enemies except someone that we think is an enemy. Our enemy may not even think of us as being an enemy. That's not our problem. Our problem is, what are we thinking? Who are we including as an enemy? Mary Baker Eddy tells us that we should settle accounts as soon as the problem comes up and make a super effort to have it done by the end of the day. In other words, you want to make peace, not with evil, but you want to perceive everyone as it states in Genesis chapter 1. In fact, she devoted time every hour of her waking hours, every hour she devoted time to making sure that she was not even thinking about what Mr. Fluno said that leads to all evil. She made sure that she was only thinking about perfection, about everyone. No evil. That's out of the picture. So that's the first thing that she does throughout the day as a high priority. And also she prays three times a day specifically for all humanity. The first one is about herself, making sure that her thought is straight and in alignment with God. And second of all, that she can see everyone, all humanity, being attracted to the truth in everything they do. She doesn't name names. It's for the benefit of all humanity. Everyone that is talked about in Genesis chapter 1, which is under the generic name of man, which historically has always meant everyone except children. And children are usually named separately. But man is generic for male and female. And she proves that in her spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer, when she gives us the Lord's Prayer on page 15, 16, and 17. I think 15 is the introduction and 16 and 17 is the actual prayer. Because when Jesus says, Our Father which art in heaven, her spiritual sense of that is explained to be Our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious. Father, Mother, all harmonious. Nothing's out of balance, no chaos. She says that if we understand properly the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer, which means, of course, we are living it, we can't understand it unless we prove it to be true by living it, then we will be able to heal anything instantaneously, just like Jesus was able to, and just like Mary Baker Eddy was able to, and just like some other very top students, such as Frederick L. Rawson. He was able to even go back in time and heal, so that everything disappeared about the pain and aggravation for the period of time that the problem was there. It wasn't just this day forward. It was removing from memory all the previous pain and aggravation. He had 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the people were out the door healed. Same with Joel Goldsmith. Same with Wentworth Winslow, who told us about the phone and the radio in the room. Also, he healed a boy from death. This was Wentworth Winslow. Joel Goldsmith was called into a Christian Science nursing home for somebody that had a problem. And so he went there. And when he entered into the reception area, the woman said, "Why are you here?" And he told her. She said, "You can't go in to see that person." He said, "Why not?" He said, "Everyone here is ill with a contagious disease. And if you go in there, you're going to come out with the problem." Well, what a great kind of a person to have as a receptionist that's a Christian Scientist. Wow. She forgot all about everything she ever learned. Well, we all do. I'm not walking on water. I haven't gotten my feet and everything gets wet when I go swimming. So he said, "How many people do you have here?" She told him it was several hundred. She said, "And everybody has the same problem." He says, "You know, you only have one problem, right? You don't have hundreds of problems, you only have one." He went over and sat down to get his thought where it needed to be, to cover everyone. And in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out and asking the receptionist, "What's going on here? Everybody is healed at the same time. No symptom of even anything ever being here." He also had 15-minute appointments. For 16 years, he was in one office, 15-minute appointments. They chased him out of town because he was in an office building right by the church that was just for Christian Science practitioners. And no one was getting any patients except him. They were all coming to him because they got healed in 15 minutes. And the other ones weren't getting any healing at all. It was apparently just a facade. They were going through the exercise, but they hadn't really understood what they were doing. And they didn't get the results. Anyway, he started an organization called The Infinite Way. They forbid him to even mention Mary Baker Eddy's name or include Christian Science in any of his writings, or they were going to sue him. Same thing, same story. Same story with everyone. Success is not welcome. The human mind doesn't want to accept change. If it was born with the idea that it was a sinner, it doesn't want to change to improve its DNA. Okay, I've said it many times, many ways. So what do you think you need to do if you want to have a change in your life that is beyond imagination? You will think you are... I saw a movie recently. It was a Western. One of the few kind of movies that usually is very good morals and so forth, except for the one or two bandits that are robbing a bank. Anyway, the fellow, by accident, and it was an accident because he tripped, and he thought he killed a preacher. And it happened to be the husband of the one of the family who found him that was taken for dead out in the desert. Anyway, he went through some difficult things, and right near the end he got shot again by the people that were robbing a bank. And when he woke up, they'd apparently got the bullets out of him and so forth. When he woke up, he said, Am I in heaven? That's what we want to be. We want to feel like we're in heaven. Because that's exactly what it is if we do this one thing and live it. And of course, that's going to be the beginning of our total transformation to have it permanent. We have to live love. What does that mean? It means we have to live a life of giving. Giving impersonally. If you see a dog on the street that is hungry, it's out looking for food, and it's thin, you know it's having a very difficult time. Yes, you should do a prayer for it, but you should also take the practical steps and get some food and water for it and feed it. If you see someone that is homeless, don't just give them money. Talk to them. Find out what their problem is. You may find that they are a well-educated individual. And who knows what problem they had. I know a fellow that was approached by somebody when he came out of a store as he was walking to his vehicle. And he said, "May I have some money?" And the fellow looked at him and he said, "Well, you look like there's nothing wrong with you. Why do you need money?" He said, "I lost my job. I wasn't smart enough to put some money aside, and I don't have any, and I haven't eaten for the last 2 days. He said, "What kind of work do you do?" "I'm a handyman. I can fix anything. I know electrical, plumbing, operate a butane, torch. I'll do any work that's needed, and I know how to do a lot of things. I've done it all my life, and I have fun doing it." The fellow had accumulated a list over the last several months of things that needed to be done, and he couldn't find anyone to do it. He ended up going over to where he lived, which was close to the shopping area where they were, and he filled the gas tank up for the guy's, he was using a motorcycle. The guy didn't even have money to put gas in it so that he could go look for a job. So he got it, he filled it up, and he took him up to his house, and they went over the list. The guy said, "I can fix everything on here." One of them was fixing a microwave. I mean, it would cost the guy, quite a bit just to ship it back to the manufacturer. It was out of warranty, but it was, it was like new other than the fact it wasn't working right. He fixed everything on the list. It took him 3 months. The very next day, he went to work for someone else as a permanent job, and he found the job a few days before his last day of work. They knew they were at the end of the list, so they were going to be done in, 2 or 3, 4 days. I know another instance where a man came out of a store, and there was a woman and her daughter. The daughter was in a wheelchair, had absolutely no control over anything. I mean, it must have been some very interesting challenge for the mother. She really didn't know where she was. She had no control over anything, and it was a very sad sight. So he gave the mother a generous donation, but he didn't know what else to do other than to pray and clear it out of his own thought. That's what awakening is. Cleaning house, cleaning our consciousness, cleansing it, putting plenty of bleach in there and whatever other cleaning products as a symbol. So as he was driving home, he was thinking, now what can be done here? Because money, unless they went the medical route and he had the funds to, you know, get whatever kind of thing that could be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to do, I don't know anything about it. But he obviously wouldn't be looking for a medical solution because he was a Christian Scientist. So the thought came to him, and by the way, they didn't speak the same language. And the thought came to him to print out the first part of Science and Health, the preface and the table of contents and the first chapter. So he printed it out and went back to the store and gave it to her, to the mother. She didn't have any idea what it was about, so she just graciously said thank you. And when he went back the next time, she had the pages out there reading them. And she didn't know he was going to be there. And he walked toward her, and that's what she was doing. And he tried to convey to her, you know, is this good or bad? And she gave him a good smile. So then he thought, you know, she doesn't know anything about this, so I'm going to print out the last chapter, which, of course, is the fruitage chapter of the testimonies of the 85 people that are some 486, I think it is, 486 healings. And then, when he went back, she got up out of his chair, out of her chair, and gave him a very extended hug. She was elated to find out all of those kinds of things, some of which were incurable diseases, described as such, because that's what she was facing. So she has hope that there's something besides just this misery for her daughter and the extended situation that she's dealing with. So what are we doing when we see someone in need? It doesn't have to be someone in a desperate need. Keep in mind that Christian Scientists used to be the smartest thinking people around. It attracted top intelligent people. What did Einstein say? Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross, total medical oriented. She said Mary Baker Eddy did the most good of anyone in the world of any sex for all humanity. In other words, man or woman. And of course, this was back in 125 years or so ago that she said this. Women couldn't vote. They couldn't hold title to property. Well, in Jesus' day, they didn't even count them as part of the population. It was only the men plus women and children. So 1900 wasn't any better. Mary Baker Eddy said that she hoped that women would be recognized as an equal to man if it didn't go too far the other way. And of course, that's exactly what happened. I don't know exactly the numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's as many or more women that are CEOs of major corporations than there are of men. I'm amazed. I was very surprised when eBay had a CEO that was a woman. I don't know, what year it was, but it was a long time ago. Probably 20, 25 years ago. The idea of a family for the woman is out the window. The suggestion of evil has been very successful to get the woman out of the home and forget all about family. And I'm not going to go into the education system and what we're doing there, but it is absolutely tragic. Tragic. Not only destroyed the family, but it's destroying the population. So, are you going to live a life of giving? Or are you just going to flip some coins or some paper currency to somebody that looks like they're in need? Or are you going to try to help them solve their problem? What are you going to do? There's a movie called Pay It Forward. I highly recommend you watch the movie. There's another one called Stand and Deliver. There's another one called Remember the Goal. They're extremely worthwhile. And right along the lines of what we're talking about here. Spirit instead of matter. Love instead of hate. If you don't start living a life of giving, you're wasting your time with Christian Science. And I've given you the reasons. Einstein, I didn't tell you what he said. It's on our website. Claire Barton's on our website. Einstein said, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. He said, blessed art thou, about Mary Baker Eddy, because everything that is in this book, the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Everything that is. He spent his life trying to figure out what makes the world tick as a physicist, extremely interested in relativity. That's what made him famous, the formula for relativity. E equals mc squared. He said he'd like to ride a beam of light throughout space. And he says, here it is. Mary Baker Eddy had it all. In fact, he said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. That's 80. She discovered it in 1866, so I imagine he must have said that, you know, right around 1946. 80 years ago, she already discovered what it took his lifetime to discover, that there is no matter. Well, that's what quantum physics is all about, quantum mechanics. When they were splitting the atom, they were getting it smaller and smaller, and they realized the only thing that was left was the consciousness of the perception of the observers. It was energy. It wasn't matter. It appeared to be matter, but it wasn't. Mary Baker Eddy says electricity is the most ethereal of all concepts of matter. If we don't live a life of giving, we're going to go nowhere. The Bible says we should tithe. What does that mean? What do you want it to mean? What does it mean to you? One of the prayer treatments that we gave to the world described, I don't know, probably 15 or 20 different ways to give. Money is one. And don't just cop out because you have other ways to give. It doesn't matter how little you earn, if that's going to be your excuse, and that by the time you pay your bills, there's nothing left over. You do your giving first. First. Not last. Were you a C student in school? A C student is the average. That's probably, I don't know, 80% of the people. Is that what you were? Average? Well, that's what tithing is, 10%, average. Tithing, a tenth part, that's average. You want to be a B student or a D? You're probably an F student. Most people are an F student. Failure. They don't give anything. And I don't mean giving it to an institution. We've done research on that. And almost every institution gives almost zero to what they advertise. There's this very heartfelt advertisement right now, very popular on the internet, where they show children that are without food. And there are a lot of children without food. And actions by one particular area of the world has been a very, very big contributor to making that happen. Murdering innocent children and women. But that's not the topic of this prayer treatment. I highly recommend you forget about giving money to almost every organization that advertises that they're doing so much good for the world. Because you will find that if you research it, and this includes the Red Cross. The Red Cross, unfortunately, focused on war. And we shouldn't even be in war. There should never be a war. There doesn't ever have to be a war. War is because of a desire for greed, of power and money and control, ego. That's what war is all about. Stealing the natural resources of another country. If you want to be a B student, you got to be thinking of a lot more than 10%. If you want to be an A student, a lot more than a B student. I know some people that give everything away except for what they need for survival. Jesus talked about the woman that gave away two mites. Two mites is about one penny. And he said she gave more than everyone else. Why? Because she gave all she had. She gave it all. I know of a situation, I read about it, where people had a very limited amount of funds, and so they weren't going to church on Wednesday evening. And I'm not saying you should be going to a Christian Science church or any other church, because almost every church in the world is corrupted, including the Christian Science churches and the organizations, the bureaucracy. Almost every single one is corrupt from beginning to end. And you will find that out if you do the research. They had just enough money for gas to get to where the meeting was. But they were so desperate in their life situation that they felt that they should do it. That they should go to that meeting. Didn't have any idea how they would get home. And even if they slept in the car, what would they do the next day? There wouldn't be any money left for food or anything else. But they did it. They had such urge to do it, and they felt like they would be able to learn something that they could hold on to. And not only did that happen, but they met somebody at the church that gave them a job. I don't recall. It's been so many years ago. It's been probably 20, 30 years ago since I read about this. Maybe 40. I don't know. I was pretty young. Anyway, yeah, they had the opportunity to present, you know, present it to them where they could solve their problem on their own effort. It wasn't a gift. Do you have any talent in anything that someone else could benefit from? You could teach it for free. I don't mean for money. That's not giving. Well, I guess it could be, but if you have the money to build a library, are you going to put your name on it? Is that an impersonal gift to put your name? You want identity? You want credit for it? It is not our duty to be thanked when we give away. Our duty is to give. It's the other person's problem or decision whether or not they want to thank you. Jesus healed 10 lepers and only one thanked him. He raised 2 people from the dead and neither one came to support him when he was crucified. He wasn't concerned about whether or not people expressed gratitude to him, although he was concerned about whether or not they had a receptive thought. He asked one blind man, "Do you believe you can be healed?" He went into Galilee, which is where he was supposedly born and raised. He had a very difficult time healing because they had a closed thought. They looked upon him as being a carpenter or as a boy, not as someone special that could actually heal. So he went to another area. He didn't stay there. They robbed themselves of the goodness of the greatest man that ever walked the globe. If you think about it, there's many ways you could give. You can give a helping hand. Does the neighbor need their lawn mowed? Did their mower break down? Maybe they need to borrow your mower. I don't know. If you go out to eat, are you generous? Or are you stingy, giving a tip? You have to do everything intelligently. You don't just blindly throw money away, even though you might have plenty. Everything needs to be utilizing the qualities of God. And intelligence is one of the qualities of God that needs to be utilized all the time with everything you do. It should be utilized in your schedule, in everything you think about. Do you have relationships with the right people? Are they holding you down? Or are they going in the same direction you're going? If you start making progress in Christian Science, you will find that you will be changing your relationships. Some, maybe you will be an inspiration for. You should be a lighthouse. Not let other people put your light out. But be intelligent in everything you do. And you don't throw pearls before swine, as it says in the Bible, not to do. Jesus said, say yea, yea, and nay, nay. In other words, say very little. Shakespeare has a good quote about that, about saying less than you know. He says the whole world is a stage. A longtime friend that was an excellent practitioner told me that the schoolyard, that's your life. Your life is your schoolyard and you're supposed to learn from it. Mary Baker Eddy says every year when your birthday rolls around, think about what wisdom did I gain in the last 12 months? Of course, I think it's a better idea to think about it on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, and so forth. with the tools we have available today, you can keep track of it whenever you do something good. Mary Baker Eddy says it's important to keep track of any healing that you know about or involved in. Progress is very important. And your mistakes also. You need to analyze them so you don't repeat them. Most people ignore history. When I was going to school, I had a big interest in mathematics, but not in history. I wish I would have had a more interest in history. History repeats itself for anyone that doesn't learn from the past. We can learn so much from the history of the country that we are involved in the world. World history. And we must think about it in a spiritual way. What caused this problem or that problem in a society? Keeping in mind that what is advertised is probably the opposite of the truth, because the media is extremely corrupt. If you're not going to live a life of giving, which means you have to be alert to the opportunities all the time. Mary Baker Eddy went shopping for chairs with Laura Sargent, her right-hand gal of all the people that were living in her home. She was teaching them all and prepping them to be a CSD, as mentioned, but Laura seemed to be the most progressive of everybody. And so they went shopping together for chairs, and it was an appointment with the owner of the store. And after the appointment was over, Laura said to Mrs. Eddy, "You were not participating at all in the conversation. I thought you would want to be involved in making the decisions. I didn't say anything in front of a man, but would you please tell me why you were not more alert and involved?" Mrs. Eddy says, "Did you notice the problem that individual had that was very visual, and it was obviously something that needed to be healed?" And that's what my attention was attracted to, in clearing up my thoughts so that he would experience a healing. So she changed. She adapted. She saw the need. She was alert. She saw the need. And she wasn't thinking about herself or her home or the need for the chairs or anything else. She was thinking about solving the problem so he would have a better sense of well-being. We must be alert. Do we thank the clerks at the store? Do we see anyone that maybe needs help? Sometimes someone will go out to pick up one thing going through the aisles, or two or three, and they come back with things that are kind of falling out of their hands because they didn't take a basket with them, thinking they would only pick up one or two things. How about somebody trying to lift something that's heavy into their car? Could we help them? There are so many ways we can be useful. If somebody cuts in front of us when we're driving, what do we think about it? Are we sending out messages of hate, inconsideration, intolerance, or the opposite? Are we thinking about if he's really in a hurry because he has a need to be somewhere? Everyone is always in the right place. All the time. It doesn't take time to be in your right place. We are there automatically, if we can conceive of it. Frederick L. Rawson says we shouldn't have to do anything physically. Everything should be able to be done mentally. He proved that at a rifle shooting contest as a hobby. He was given a rifle to use. He'd never had that model in his hand. and he brought two other students with him. They were also interested in competing in the contest. And, of course, he taught them that you don't compete with another individual. You're competing with perfection. So he said, I don't know about you fellows, but I'm going to pray before I pull the trigger. They all decided they'd do the same thing. They were all serious students. They looked away from the target. They held the gun up. They looked away from the target and closed their eyes and got in alignment with harmony and balance and intelligence, things along that line, and then pulled the trigger, still with their eyes closed, looking away from the target. They all had exceptional scores, and Mr. Rawson won the tournament. And that was what was exercised throughout the tournament, with all three. We are like at a record on the length of this prayer treatment, so I'm going to bring it to a close. I hope you take to heart what you have to do as the very first thing in your life. And even if you are generous at giving, are you looking for ways besides money? And are you just giving it to institutions that are probably going to siphon it all off? The report that I read most recently was between 0 and 5% was the amount of the funds received that ended up being received by the advertised purpose of the organization. In fact, I can tell you the source. Elon Musk, considered the wealthiest man in the world for quite some time now, he started an organization called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And he established it starting on January the 20th, the day that the current president was sworn in to be the president number 47. And they did a study on the organizations that claimed to be nonprofit organizations to the U.S. government and therefore had special privileges in how they operated and so forth. And they were all supposed to be nonprofit and state their purpose. And they found that because of their expertise in mathematics and computer programming and so forth, that between 0 and 5%, you know, depending on which organization it was, but the most was 5%. And the worst was they gave nothing to their purpose. And we're talking billions of dollars. Billions and billions a year. So, that's not giving if you're going to give recklessly and without using intelligence. Andrew Carnegie started or sold his company, and it was named U.S. Steel. This was back in the around 1900 or so. He was considered one of, if not the wealthiest men at that time. And I believe he sold his business for $350 or $400 million. And he, after he sold it, that was his primary business, he spent the rest of his life giving his money away, which was very noble, and he did a lot of good with it. But he wanted to get credit for it. So his name is on all the buildings. As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, I think I have his first name incorrect because there's another Carnegie. But anyway, he had his name on all the buildings. So if you go in the eastern part of the U.S. and to the British Isles, because his heritage, I think, was Irish or something. Anyway, he built universities and buildings, or university buildings and libraries, public buildings, throughout that area and also the eastern, northeastern part in particular of the U.S. And they all have his name on it. So it's better if we do things in a private way so that it's anonymous and not a temptation to be an ego thing. Because that's not giving away. That's getting notoriety, which is not giving. I'm sure anyone could think of a number of ways that they can give, and a number of ways that you can be alert to finding other people in need. There are some very worthy causes, but you can't just trust an institution. You've got to be involved in what you're doing and making sure the money is going to where you want it to go to. And if you're intelligent, which everyone has the ability to be, you can make sure that it does. You can pay directly to where the end source is supposed to be. I mean, there's tons of ways to do this. But you have to be intelligent. If you're a real guru on investments, you could give classes. And of course, today, with today's tools, you can do it over the internet. You can give classes worldwide. Something like 95% of the people that make investments lose it. That's proven by the tax returns. You know, the 1099s that are reporting it to the government directly from your investment account. Something like 95% are end losers at the end of the year. Well, I've given you information that can get you started. And the website, by the way, is mbeinstitute.org. And in the footer, there are buttons there that will tell you about the Institute. There's an About button and a Contact button. And in the header, which is the top of every page on the website, there's a button that says Heal Everything. And we give you detailed steps, some of which have been described in this prayer treatment, on how you can be successful in healing whatever problem occurs. I'm going to bring this to a close with a prayer treatment from Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her class, her final class in 1898 of the Metaphysical College. And she provided seven of them, one for each of the seven terms. And by the way, the founder of the Institute, Mary Baker Eddy Institute, was an avid author. Her name is Helen Wright. And she wrote a book. Her final book was called Your Divinity Revealed. And in it, there's a chapter on each of the seven synonymous terms. Chapter 4 is on mind, chapter 5 is on spirit, and so forth. So, seven chapters from 4 to 10 are on the seven synonymous terms. And that's one of the first things you want to do is to learn thoroughly what those seven terms are all about. And they all work together in a network. In other words, if you're not intelligent in the way you identify something, which is soul, and you're not looking for the spiritual qualities, which is spirit, and you're not living your life with vitality and vigor, that's life, and if you're not structured in what you do, that's principle, And if you're real sloppy with whether you make mistakes or not, then you're not abiding by truth. And we've discussed extensively what love is all about. So that's like just a couple of words on each of the seven. And she describes in great detail how they all work together in that book, Your Divinity Revealed, which is on the website. As of now, everything is being offered gratis. So donations are one way you can give if you would like to. I shall now recite one of the seven synonymous terms that are, they're all titled Diapason of Heaven. Several of the prayer treatments would be appropriate here for the following reasons. Mind is the action. It reveals. It also guides and directs. It turns on the light. Soul also has a very direct impact, because that means we have to identify correctly. And that's very important in revealing and in awakening. Truth, of course, is also very important, because that enables us to awaken as one of the primary terms of truth. And we're awakening to the difference between truth and error. The Diapason of Heaven for mind will be recited. All seven of them are available, so you're certainly invited to read and study the other six as well. Diapason of Heaven for mind. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen. It is Sunday, 25/09/21 at 15:18. Thank you for listening.